We have now come to Genesis chapter 5 in our evening studies in Genesis, so let's open the Bibles to Genesis 5. This is the book of the generations of Adam. When God created man, he made him in the likeness of God. Male and female he created them, and he blessed them and named them man when they were created. When Adam had lived 130 years, he fathered a son in his own likeness after his image and named him Seth. The days of Adam after he fathered Seth were 800 years, and he had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days that Adam lived were 930 years, and he died. When Seth had lived 105 years, he fathered Enosh. Seth lived after he fathered Enosh 807 years, and had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Seth were 912 years, and he died. When Enosh had lived 90 years, he fathered Kenan. Enosh lived after he fathered Kenan 850 years, and had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Enosh were 905 years, and he died. When Kenan had lived 70 years, he fathered Mahalalel. Kenan lived after he fathered Mahalalel 840 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Kenan were 910 years, and he died. When Mahalalel had lived 65 years, he fathered Jared. Mahalalel lived after he fathered Jared 830 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Mahalalel were 895 years, and he died. When Jared had lived 162 years, he fathered Enoch. Jared lived after he fathered Enoch 800 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Jared were 962 years, and he died. When Enoch had lived 65 years, he fathered Methuselah. Enoch walked with God. After he fathered Methuselah 300 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus, all the days of Enoch were 365 years. Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. When Methuselah had lived 187 years, he fathered Lamech. Methuselah lived after he fathered Lamech 782 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus, all the days of Methuselah were 969 years, and he died. When Lamech had lived 182 years, he fathered a son and named him Noah, saying, "Out of the ground that the Lord has cursed, this one shall bring us comfort from our work and from the painful toil of our hands." Lamech lived after he fathered Noah 595 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus, all the days of Lamech were 777 years, and he died. After Noah was 500 years old, Noah fathered Shem, Ham, and Japheth. I believe in the resurrection of the body and the life everlasting. So goes the Apostles' Creed. The very last credo concerning the life everlasting entails the new creation. Everlasting life can unfold only in a setting that allows for its enjoyment. So, everlasting life means life in the fullest sense, life and all that goes with it, a new heaven and a new earth. And it may seem strange that the resurrection and the life everlasting or the promise of a new creation are also the focal points of a biblical genealogy, but this is the case here in Genesis 5, the line from Adam to Noah. This consistent linear pattern that I did not make any efforts to make sound better than it is, this family tree is punctured at two points. Two names stand out in the otherwise formulaic language. There is Enoch, the seventh from Adam, who walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. And then there is Lamech the tenth. And he prophesied of his son, Noah, that he would comfort them from God's curse on the earth or the ground. Both of these references, in the context in which they occur, are impossible to ignore, and they call for attention. Therefore, also, these two high points of the genealogy, they are our focal point tonight because they break the pattern and because these comments give the passage its theological definition. First, the comment about Enoch, verse 24, and second, Lamech's direct speech in verse 29. But before we turn to these two, the prevailing genealogical pattern also lays an important foundation. Two principles inhabit this list of names. One, God hasn't withdrawn his blessing, and that may come as a surprise despite the curse. People still multiply and fill the earth, so the blessing of God has not been rescinded. And second, of course, death reigns, as Paul says in Romans 5:14, death reigns, a point made in relentless fashion in the monotonous phrase, and he died. And to hear this eight times forces the concession that yes, these eponymous forefathers, they lived hundreds of years almost unassailed by the so common signs of aging that we wrestle with from the day that we see our first gray hair to the day that we are carried into the grave. They live hundreds of years, and yet God wasn't kidding when he said that death is the wages of sin. And as the preacher says in Ecclesiastes, chapter 11, or rather chapter 9, verse 11, the race is not to the swift, and the battle is not to the strong, but time and chance happen to them all. Death is no respecter of persons. Death doesn't bargain and never misses the target. The curse is real, and it sinks its teeth into every human life. But this leads us to Enoch now. The presence of death so emphasized, and he died, and he died, and he died eight times, the reference to Enoch is all the more striking. His epitaph is not, and he died, but, and he was not, for God took him. So there is one exception to the law, one man who didn't see death, which brings the life beyond death into the realm of fact and takes it out of the realm of speculation and conjecture, no matter how elusive the language of Enoch's disappearance. But imagine a search party roaming an antediluvian landscape. The group is led by a young man named Methuselah. At only 300 years of age, he is wise beyond his years. In places where the terrain is hard to survey, they shout out the name of the person who is amiss. Enoch! Enoch! But after days of combing the hills and dark mountain slopes, Methuselah, the first son of Enoch, signals to his brothers what is now clear to everyone. It's useless. Enoch won't be found. No, indeed. He wasn't found, as also the inner biblical commentary on this passage in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 5 affirms. Now, biblical data about Enoch is admittedly sketchy, and all that our text offers is the laconic remark of verse 24. He walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. But these few words, in Hebrews even far fewer than in English, are like a window to yonder. And the light of life is flooding through this window. The terse reference has a monumental effect on this list of 10 names. All bear the mark of death. All have the same epitaph written over them. All live long and tiresome lives of hundreds of years, but eventually all succumb to the great enemy. Yet the rule is broken. Enoch being only one of two figures who escape our common fate. It's clear from this reference in verse 24 and even more so from the commentary in Hebrews 11:5 that Enoch's being taken up to be with God is a consequence of the life that he lived, a consequence of a life of faith. He was a man who practiced the presence of God. He walked with God means by faith he lived a life of intimacy and fellowship with God. He sought communion with God. And after 365 years, and I would imagine that they were not easy for Enoch, Jude 14, the second in a biblical commentary on the life of Enoch, lets us in on a little secret. This man, Enoch, was a preacher of the judgment of God. And he would therefore not have been a very sought-after conference speaker in his days. But these 365 years of walking by faith, not by sight, were rewarded. God took him. And so God granted Enoch's wish of unbroken fellowship with him. It was what God wanted for Enoch too. That's why on that day, Methuselah and his brothers aborted their fruitless search and returned home without daddy. They would never see him again in this life. But here at the very beginning of the biblical story, there is a hint of how it will end. Old Testament writers shared the hope of this text. Psalm 49 verse 15, for example, God will ransom my soul from the power of Sheol, for he will take me. This is the same verb. So also Psalm 73 verse 24, perhaps words that are a little more familiar to us. You will guide me by your counsel and afterward take me to glory. Understand that what God wanted for Enoch and granted is what God wants for you and will grant also. As the writer of Hebrews says, everyone who comes to him must believe that he exists. You must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who seek him. And by this word, the author democratizes the hope of life after death and ultimately the resurrection. God rewards the seeker. He's too good not to. You will find him because he lets himself be found by you. So earlier we joined a group of antediluvians in search of Enoch, but our text sends us on a different quest in another direction. Prepare your heart to seek God. Walk with him. Are you on this quest? Are you on this journey? Have you found him and do you still seek him? Enoch obtained unbroken fellowship with God because he lived a life of faith. And so the last words of Enoch are, God took him. And that will be true of all of us. He will take you, so be encouraged. Every walk of faith, every journey of faith with God leads to being taken and ultimately the resurrection. The reference to Enoch in this genealogy is here for this very reason, to assure you of his promise. But now the same is also true for Lamech's prophecy. Now what did Lamech see in little Noah, baby Noah, to utter these remarkable words about comfort from the curse on the ground? I don't know, but I do know that in biblical literature, the birth of a son often gives rise to a prophecy. After all the hopes of mankind are pinned upon the birth of a son as Savior ever since God pronounced the promise after the fall. It is peculiar, though, that Lamech's prophecy concerning Noah, which means rest, focuses on the Adamah, that is, the ground or the earth. The painful toil that is mentioned here in our text, the painful toil is the result of God cursing the ground, as you can see from chapter 3, verse 17. So when Lamech anticipates comfort from this curse, he may indeed have no more in mind than the relief that the ESV has here in verse 29, although we can't be certain of this. But if we allow the utterance to be heard in light of total revelation, that is, in light of the whole story of redemption, well, then the comfort from the curse ultimately implies the lifting of the curse and a new creation, as I said, in the final consequence. And indeed, the new beginning after Noah's flood is also portrayed as a new creation in Genesis chapter 8, verse 9. We will get to this in due time. Even though the world that emerged from the flood was still under the curse, but the hope of a new heaven and new earth on the far side of the curse, the hope of comfort from the curse, is our response to God's promise. And it still stands. Says Paul, creation itself will be set free from its bondage to corruption and obtain the glorious freedom of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth until now. In this hope we were saved, and we wait for it patiently. Both our hope in the resurrection and in life everlasting, they are located in Jesus Christ. As he says, I am the resurrection and the life. You may say life everlasting to align it with our creed. I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? Death has no more power over you than it had over Enoch because of Christ's victory over death. Because he is the first to rise from the grave, he has secured the promise of a bodily resurrection for all who walk with him like Enoch. But he is also the last in that he will bring this old creation to its conclusion, terminate all suffering and painful toil, to use Lamech's language, and make all things new. The word comfort will have a whole new meaning when once he wipes away every tear from your eyes and death shall be no more. With Enoch and Lamech, the resurrection and the life everlasting strangely linger over the law of death set forth in this family tree, like a fragrance from another world. Can you see it? Can you see him who speaks in this text and who is the subject of this text? If you do, if you follow, if you seek, and if you walk with him, then the light of life guides you all the way to your destiny, the resurrection of the body and the life everlasting, and your credo won't be in vain. There's only one walk that has promise in this life. Walk with God. For all the things that you see, past and present, Don't fail to see the future because it's yours. This hope and yearning for God's promise to be fulfilled, which speaks in Lamech's prophecy about the ground that the Lord has cursed, it so sharply contrasts with the words of another Lamech whose acquaintance we made last week. Remember the Lamech of Cain. He's also the last of the family tree. He has the same name, and his line is marked by important inventions, progress, and technology. But as we analyzed the text, we came to the conclusion that they remain on earth and they return to the dust, as all people do. Enoch, however, walked with God, and his progress is of a different kind. God took him home. And as Lamech's song of revenge from Genesis 4 shows, Cain's line is also marked by arrogance and independence of God. Cain's Lamech looks to a future of his own making, which is secured by the threat of his vengeance. Whereas Lamech, the Lamech of God's people, looks to God's promise as his future, fulfilled and made certain by the birth of a son. It's not by accident that the first two biblical genealogies end with the name Lamech and direct speech, respectively. Implied in this are two kinds of people, two ways of life, and finally the choice that we all must make. Make your choice by the faith that speaks between the lines of this text, this line of people. Believe in the resurrection of the body and the life everlasting in Jesus Christ. And this must be your choice and way of life if you want to walk with and be with God. And He will be with you. Any questions or comments?